standing after the flag salute. Our invocation this evening will be given by Dr. Mayor Harnish of Baha'i Faith.
Uncover. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This is a prayer for unity. Oh my God, oh my God, unite the hearts of thy servants and reveal to them thy great purpose. May they follow thy commandments and abide in thy law. Help them, O God, in their endeavor, and grant them strength to serve thee. O God, lead them not to themselves, but guide their steps by the light of thy knowledge, and cheer their hearts by thy love. Verily, thou art their helper and their Lord.
Thank you. Alvin, you brought reinforcements this evening.
I brought some reinforcements this
okay.
evening.
Okay, good. We'd like to hear about American Legion and okay. some of the activities that you're up to.
See, I have trouble seeing, too, so I made a few notes. And, since the last time we were up here, we made the donations to our youth and community of the Boy State Program, which we're working on right now through the high schools. Napomo High School Time Tracker, the Renaissance Program at Rugrande High School, the Santa Cop Program to the Rugrande Police Department takes care of that, and the American Legion Baseball in Napomo. They started an American Legion Baseball team, one of the coaches down there, and they did pretty well in the district playoffs. We gave out 5 scholarships to Rugrande High School, Napomo High School, and Lopez High School, with our Women's Auxiliary giving out 3 scholarships. We presented some money to the Rio Grande Valley Little League this month to help them along. At our last district meeting, we were told that California Legionnaires have donated a record of a recorded amount of $3,296,000 to their children and youth programs in their communities. We also, at our local Legion here, we have a care package program where we send packages to local men that are in the service in Iraq or Afghanistan. Our first Friday, which is coming up this Friday, the auxiliary has a fish fry. In the afternoon, they usually put time out there in front of the Legion building, our veterans building on Orchard Street in Rugrande. And I want to remind everyone that Memorial Day, to get it down on your calendar, it's coming up May 30th. And we have different veterans organizations that help put this program on at the Rugrande District Cemetery. Please support our troops for God and country. Thank you, Mayor and Councilman.
Thank you. Appreciate you being here. Okay, that takes us to item 5, I think. Special presentations, and we do have one this evening, and I would invite Mr. Jim Bergman to meet me at the podium. Good evening, Jim. How are you?
Pretty good, thanks.
This evening, we have the pleasure of honoring one of our own. And for those of you who are not aware of it, here in the city of Rio Grande, we've initiated a program that periodically recognizes employees for outstanding service. And in order to reinforce the organizational values, we refer to that program as the Platinum Service Club. And we recently recognized several of our city employees who've contributed to increased efficiency here in the city, to some of the city's operations, and the last time we did it, Jim was unable to make it, so we're going to recognize him tonight. And I wanted to just tell you a little bit about what Jim has been up to. He's recently taken on a number of city economic development functions, and as a result of a reorganization in that part of our operation, it's ultimately enabled the city to address an ongoing budget deficit in the city's redevelopment agency. And he has been involved in expanding many of the city's business assistance program. Jim has also been instrumental in establishing the city's ag conservation efforts, as well as a number of other successful and important programs and projects. So, Jim, it's with a great deal of pleasure that I present this mayor's commendation. It's to Jim Bergman on this 28th day of February, 2006, in recognition of your membership in the Platinum Service Club for service above and beyond the call of duty. So I'd like to give this to you right now.
Thank you.
Good. Thanks. Don't go away. This is a little token. This is dinner for two for you and the mayor, I think it says here. So.
Excellent.
So
thank
enjoy.
You. Thank you again.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Okay, that takes us to item 6, agenda review. Move that all ordinances presented tonight be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. That takes us to item 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward and comment on items that are not published on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any formal action on matters that are not published on the agenda. If there is any member of the audience that would like to come forward during a public comment, please adhere to the 3-minute rule. Please address the council as a whole. Good evening, Mr. Page.
Good evening, Mayor. My name is Otis Page. I live at 606 Middle Street. I wish to briefly discuss two items, the Briscoe interchange question and the ag issue before the council. I was pleased to see the deliberations at the last council meeting on the Briscoe interchange question. I thought that the homework by the city is excellent, and I thought the questions and considerations by the council were great. I think we understand as citizens what we face with Briscoe, people who are familiar with that issue. As you know, I was on the original committee for this, and I have at one time or another been active with SLOCOG on issues of funding for interchanges here in the city. I have the following suggestion. I believe it is time to step up for the city to address the issue to the citizens of the city that we are required to probably raise the sales tax to help fund the interchange, and that I would encourage the council to direct the staff on a task to address this with the citizenry for a vote possibly in November. Further, I would ask the council to consider that you make a determination on the priority of whether you do a health saloon overpass or to broaden 4 lanes at Briscoe. Whether of coordinating this with SLOCOG, with Rhonda Colley, with various state agencies to get the funding for this is an arduous task, and we have to have the city behind it. Any questions? If not, let me proceed with the ag question. The council in the past has considered what was the intent of the city council when it established the ag policy. That basically evolves into a question. Does the ag policy just exist to prime soil properties which are presently being farmed, or does it address those plus open space ag soils properties? All right. I think that was a question that you considered at the last meeting, and there was some possible division on the council as to what the policy really was and what the intent was at the time it was discussed. Have I made myself clear? Okay. I have a suggestion. The technology today is terrific in allowing you to do things we could never be able to do in the past. If you review the minutes of the meetings where the ag policy was devised, I believe it shows a clear consensus by the council, the then-standing council, that it supports ag soil policy plus protecting farms. However, the only way you can resolve that is to go back to the original meetings. Those meetings are on tape, TV tape, as they're being addressed tonight. And today, as you know, it's a very simple thing for the technology to take the tape, 2001 general plan establishment, when Mayor Lady, Lubin, and Reynolds were part of the council, and it subsequently covers the meetings of December 10th, 2002, January 14th, 2003, and March 23, 2004, when the new council set and then firmly established what the policy is. Okay? So there are four meetings. And it would be a very simple thing for the staff to take those tapes and give them to a group that could dump them to a DVD so that you could give them out to yourselves plus the staff plus the Planning Commission. That's my suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Hi. My name is Ray Quintana, and I represent a new organization that is forming called the Five Cities Dog Park Association. It is our goal to find a location here in the Five Cities where people can bring their dogs for off-leash activity in a controlled environment. We hope to satisfy a real and unfulfilled need that local community residents can benefit from. For the past 5 years, many dog owners have been using the Costa Bella Water Basin in Grover Beach as a place to let their dogs play off-leash. However, recently the city of Grover Beach has been issuing citations to these citizens. Because of this, we are approaching several cities, including Grover Beach, Pismo Beach. We have come here tonight to let you know that we will be publicizing the Five Cities Dog Park Association. We have already found that we have enough support from residents and local businesses that are willing to donate the money to fund this event. Also, in our attempt to find a suitable location, we will be working with the Parks and Recreation Department, the Park Committee, the City Council, and the County in hopes of acquiring land and necessary support to make this park a reality. We are currently in contact with Slowpost in order to obtain the status of a nonprofit organization. We would like to thank you for your time tonight. We are not here to ask you to spend money, as we believe we can find the necessary funding to make this a reality. We are only asking for your support as community members, taxpayers, and voters. We also hope that you remember us in a positive manner the next time you hear the name Five Cities Dog Park Association. We sincerely hope that our efforts are reflected in a favorable and beneficial way to promote a better local community. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening, Mayor, City Council. My name is Dennis Murphy, and I'm here on behalf of South County Youth Coalition, an organization based here in Arroyo Grande. And I just like to make a brief statement, and it's actually a thank you to you for your generous donation to our organization and to let you know that we have every sincere intention of using those funds wisely. We've already used some of the funding that you've provided us for some scholarships, for primarily athletic scholarships for some of the kids in the community that otherwise would not have an opportunity to participate in soccer and Little League and things of that nature.
Those the community comments and suggestions. And we'll move to item 8, which is our consent agenda. This is a group of items that the council normally approves in one action, unless there are items on consent that a member of the council would like to pull for a separate action or clarification. This is also an opportunity for members of the audience to come forward and comment on consent items 8A through 8E, it looks like. So this would be that opportunity at this time. Any member of the audience would like to come forward on a consent item, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay, seeing no one, we will close the public comment portion of the consent agenda and bring this back to the council. What is the will of the council? Any items on consent?
I have none.
Okay, none. Then if there are no items to be pulled, I will entertain a motion to approve items 8A through 8E.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Anything in there this evening, Tim? Okay. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. That takes us to item 9, public hearings. And we have three this evening. 9A is consideration of approval of the 2005 Urban Water Management Plan. Evening, Don.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. We are in the process of developing some additional information that we need some time for, and we'd like and recommend that the council continue this item to the March 14th meeting where we can present the entire program to you.
Okay. This was a notice public hearing. Let me ask members of the audience, anyone here this evening that came specifically for 9A. If so, we will take public comment this evening. No one? Okay. Then we'll bring this back for what appears to be a motion to continue then.
Mr. Mayor, I'll make a motion to continue consideration of approval of the 2005 Urban Water Management Plan until the March 14th, 2006 meeting.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes, thank you. Well, that takes us to 9B. Consideration of adoption of a resolution approving community development block grant projects for 2006.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. Staff was last here to discuss community development block grants on November 22, 2005, and at that meeting you developed draft funding recommendations for programs in the year 2006. At that meeting you also requested information on how funds are to be distributed throughout the county based on three main factors: population, the number of people below poverty level, and the number of overcrowded houses in each city. The number of people below poverty level is weighted heavier by being multiplied by a factor of two. So we could look at Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande, and we see that Arroyo Grande has a population slightly higher than Grover Beach, but Grover Beach has more people below the poverty level as well as more overcrowded housing. So this is what accounts for their higher allocation for the 2006 year. And this formula is based on housing and urban development standards. Secondly, you asked staff to talk with Harvest Bag, and we contacted the member of Harvest Bag who filed the application, and he stressed that there's still a continued need for reliable vehicles to carry out their main mission of delivering food to people in need. They were very thankful that they've so far have been able to replace one vehicle with CDGB funds, but the main truck that transports food from the Central Valley is in desperate need of replacement. The gentleman also stressed that a refrigerator recently became inoperable and will need to be replaced. Since we last met, the total available funds has been reduced for the city of Arroyo Grande by $12,232. This is following the overall trend of the federal government reducing the program approximately 10% each year. With that, and taking into mind the need of Harvest Bag, staff has the following recommendations to meet the budget. Any projects in the public services that were going to be granted, reduction of funds to the Small Business Development Center by $1,000. Code enforcement of facade grants are suggested to be reduced by $1,468. And finally, administration funds to be reduced by $2,446. I have a table on the overhead if you need to refer to it. And with that, staff recommends that the City Council adopt a resolution approving community development block grant projects for the year 2006. And I can answer any questions.
I do have a quick question, Jim, and that is, how current is the information and on overcrowded houses? Where does that come from? Does it come from census figures?
It's all based on 2,000 census figures.
2,000 census figures?
That's correct.
So we're dealing with six-year-old data here.
That's correct, and that follows the HUD guidelines.
Okay. Any other questions on the staff report? Okay, this is a public hearing. If there are members of the audience who would like to come forward on this item, 9B, this would be an opportunity to do so. No one? Okay. We'll close public comment and bring this back to the council. And Councilmember Dickens, why don't you start us off here?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Jim, I appreciate the report and I appreciate the feedback. I think part of the request in my concern at the last time this came before us, I would like to make a request, and I know that it gets tricky in how we actually specifically allocate the funding. We've been doing it based primarily on last year's requests and those kinds of things. But I think that, in all due respect to the Harvest Bag, all of these organizations are fabulous organizations. They're all in need of additional funding. And I think if we were to call each one of them, we would find that they all have specific needs. And I guess from my perspective, as I think it's I would feel much more comfortable in regards to laying out the funding that we the minimum or the limited funding that we do have available in a more equitable manner, and I'd like to spread the wealth a little bit further. So I would be asking that we at this particular time look at the total requested and the total monies that are available, and basically just divide it by, it's basically a 58% reduction in the request, and do it that way, and then start fresh next year. I do understand that we have needs, Harvest Bag, and again, I know it's a great organization, but I'd sure hate to be seen as favoring one of these wonderful organizations over another, and I think that we need to bring it into a little more equitable light, and so I would be requesting that we would make some adjustments. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I know this is a very difficult issue. It was to be even, then I could also change and support that. That's all. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah, I this does actually prompt one question. Does Harvest Bank have any other source of public funding other than the City of Roy Grande? Do you guys?
They apply to all the cities in the five cities area that are in the CDBG program to receive funds, and they try to request from the cities where they serve the customers from.
Okay.
Would like to point out that by reducing everyone by 15.7%, Harvest Bag lost the most dollar value in the total outcome. The staff has also been thinking about ideas that we could bring to you next year in a more equal way to distribute this money, and especially looking at breaking these up into categories, possibly breaking up 25% of the money to go to those services that provide food, 25% that to those that give out health care, 25% to those who do social services, and 25% to youth. And that's just our idea. We have a year to work on some ways to better this process for everyone.
So in the way that the reductions took place, actually all of these were in fact reduced equally, in the sense that they may not have started out equal, but they were all reduced equally based on the allocations that weren't available. Again, if there's will of the council to redo these, I could go with that. But I think that actually the way that staff has proposed it here is acceptable.
Okay, thank you. Type of service, and so there are direct material services, and then there are, for lack of a better term, soft services, counseling, so on and so forth. And I'm certainly not discounting the importance of those. As far as Harvest Bag goes, if you look at Harvest Bag, if you look at senior health screening, I think those are the two big kind of direct service categories or line items that we have here, and I'm in support of that, because what they're doing is delivering a direct product to the people that they serve. Senior health screening, I think, is a marvelous organization that the EOC has got going, and I've been a long-standing supporter of Harvest Bag. They take food to people who are hungry, and so I think there can be a distinction made here. I believe that the equity distribution that you have here is acceptable to me. But I would like to see, perhaps in the future, I would like to see perhaps that other category that you mentioned, and look at it from the standpoint of the type of service that they provide. Maybe make that a little more specific. But I can support this just fine this evening. I think you've done a good job based on the reduction that we got. It's as equitable, given the circumstances that I've outlined, as we can possibly make it. So those are my thoughts. I just wish we were dealing
with... I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
No.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Okay, that takes us to
Mayor, I'm sorry to interrupt. I thought it might be beneficial while we have all the recipients in the room. I just wanted to report. We were notified by the League of California Cities today there's pretty stringent cuts proposed by the administration for next year, and we were asked to contact our Congress representatives. So those that are currently benefiting from those funds, they might want to do the same, and wanted to make all those folks aware of that while we have a number of them here today.
That takes us to 9C, consideration of an ordinance establishing regulations for peddling and soliciting activities.
Watch your water.
Good evening, Chief.
Good evening. Mayor, members of the council, first, I'd like to welcome our new police chief, Tony Isles, up here. This is his first opportunity to be a part of a staff report, and he has graciously allowed me to actually give the report. But if you want to change your mind, it's yours.
I think you'll do an outstanding job. Thank you.
Thank you. Over the course of the last year or so, the city's received a substantial influx in the number of complaints it's received regarding solicitation activities, door-to-door sales activities. And these complaints have ranged from simply aggressive sales tactic, that proposed ordinance. The city's general police power allows the city to regulate this type of activity if it bears a reasonable relationship to the health, safety, and welfare of the community, and it clearly does. The courts have made a clear distinction between regulating commercial and non-commercial activities. Non-commercial activities, religious, charitable, solicitation, is generally off-limits based on constitutional grounds, First Amendment rights, speech, religion, the press. So the ordinance you have before you is restricted to commercial solicitation activities. And the gist of the ordinance requires any peddler or solicitor that operates within the city to obtain a solicitation permit through a process at the police department. They're also to obtain a business license, and they have to carry both of those with them at all times. The other new component to the proposed ordinance is something offered up by Councilmember Arnold, a real novel idea that we have incorporated into the proposed ordinance, and that's a do not solicit registry in which citizens can opt to list their address, and I want to make it clear, not their name, although they will be required to submit through the application process their name. The registry itself will only have an address, and these will be addresses where the residents have indicated they do not want any solicitation activities to take place. Under the ordinance, if you're on the do not solicit registry and or if you post a do not solicit sign and a solicitor with a permit seeks to solicit at your home, then you're in violation of the ordinance. So that's another component that we've included. Other than that, it's a fairly onerous sequence of getting permits, but we really felt that that was required in order to matter restrictions. Solicitation activities can only take place between the hours of 9 a.m. and 8 p.m., and there are a few other fairly light time, place, and manner restrictions contained in the ordinance, as I'm sure you know because you've read it. Other than that, we'd be glad to answer any questions. Police Chief Iles has indicated he would like to answer those questions, so if you can direct the questions to him. If he can't field them, I will.
Okay. Any questions for either Tony or Tim?
I have a few.
Okay. Since you're the star of this staff report.
This is my first one. Let's see. Under item 5.76.050, the permit fees, one of the questions I had was, can the fee also cover the cost to maintain the do not solicit list?
I'd be glad to take that question. Yes, it's intended to cover all city costs associated with both the registry enforcement activities and the actual permitting process itself. So it'll be an all-inclusive fee.
And then under the 5.76.090 soliciting where no soliciting signs is posted, I was a little unclear if you had a sign, did that restrict all persons, including the nonprofits, or does that, because I understand that the list would only prohibit people who were for-profit, I guess you could say, whereas if you have a sign, that would restrict everyone. Is that correct?
That is correct. I think from an enforcement perspective, we wouldn't seek to enforce this ordinance if someone did post a no solicitation sign. Again,
5.76.130, compliance, do not solicit registry. I thought probably you need to add the line there, with exception of those in 5.76.030, which would allow the tax-exempt, basically, agencies or organizations to solicit, in essence. Because there it says basically any person or peddler or solicit on private property can't do it if the do not solicit list. I thought that we had to go back and probably add that exception again.
Well, we could certainly do that. The way I read it, and I think the intent here was if you go back to 030, the ordinance specifically exempts out of the ordinance in its entirety any person peddling or soliciting on behalf of an institution or organization recognized by a tax board or a nonprofit or religious. Essentially, they're exempted out from the entire chapter, which would have exempted them out from that section. But if the council wants to indulge in a little bit of draftsmanship, we can do it right here. Right. I don't really think it's necessary.
Okay, if it's not necessary, I just didn't. I really don't want people to be afraid of the list. Is what I think the list can have some value, and I don't want there to be organizations fearing that they're going to be excluded. I know my wife with the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts was happy that from one side on this and was very nervous on the other. So I had to let her know that it wasn't going to affect that. So that's all I have. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Any other questions or clarifications on the staff report? Okay, this is a public hearing. If there are members of the audience who would like to come forward on 9C, this would be an opportunity. Still no takers? Okay. We'll close the public hearing portion.
Solution that could make everybody happy and we could actually enforce, and I think you've done an excellent job.
Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I don't have a problem with this. I think it's reasonable. I think it's due diligence on the city's part to certainly regulate in a reasonable manner any kind of door-to-door solicitation, and I think that this does it appropriately. I believe that the different checks and balances that are put in place here, I think, will ensure the public safety and welfare, and I think will certainly reduce significantly any nuisance that we have received in the past from solicitors. So I appreciate staff's work on this and can support it as presented.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
I don't have anything to add to that. I can support it as presented.
Okay. I just want to throw this out here for some consideration or some feedback. I'm looking at page 4 of the ordinance, hours of operation. Is the 8 p.m. in the evening thing pretty standard? The reason why I ask is that, it appears that, somewhere between 6:30 and 7 is the dinner hour. 6:30 to 8, somewhere in that area, is the dinner hour. So I was wondering if it would be possible to back that up to maybe 7 p.m. instead of 8 p.m.
The sampling of ordinances that we looked at around the state did generally have these hours, but I think that's perfectly within your purview and discretion to modify it by an hour.
7 o'clock at night when you're sitting down at the dinner table, that's something that might be an issue. I'd like to see it cut off at 7. That's my own personal feeling.
I saw that. I was actually wondering if we could make it based on even sunset, but I figured there was some logic to your number, so no, I could definitely support that.
Yeah, I too think it's appropriate.
Okay. All right, if there's no other comments, then I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move that the City Council adopt an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande adding Chapter 5.76 to the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code, establishing regulations for peddling and soliciting activities.
With the modification?
With the modification of 8 p.m. to 7 p.m.
I can second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. All right, that takes us to our new business. 11A, consideration of fiscal year 2005-06 mid-year budget report. Good evening, Angela.
Good evening, Mayor, Council Members. I am pleased to present the fiscal year 2005-2006 mid-year budget report. This increase is due to CIP projects that were budgeted and not completed at year-end and the long-awaited receipt of the motor vehicle license fee gap loan. Second, the projected fund balance for June 30, 2006 is approximately $2.3 million, or 18% of appropriations. The projected fund balance assumes that revenues are received exactly as budgeted and budgeted expenditures and transfers are completed. Since this is not always the case, staff expects to be close to the 20% fund balance goal at year end. Next, we are finally seeing some improvement in the city's revenues. Total general fund revenue increased by approximately $502,000 compared to the prior year. However, expenditures increased by a slightly higher amount at $513,000. As you can see, maintaining revenues to meet expenditures continues to be a challenge. Total general fund revenues for the first 6 months of the year are at 38% of budget. This is below the 50% mark for several reasons. One, the current sales tax revenue only includes 4 months of tax receipts. November receipts were received in January, and December receipts were received in February. As of today, this revenue source is at 51% of budget. Franchise payments of $100,000 were not received until the third quarter, causing this line item to be down. Third, a December property tax payment was not received until January. And lastly, triple flip payments that were to apply to the first half of the year were not received until January, and these amounted to $913,000. Had all these revenues been received in the first half of the year, total general fund revenues would be at approximately 51%. Finally, with half of the year complete, general fund expenditures are on target at 47% of the
bank. Is that something that's going to straighten itself out next year, or are we out the are we down the $25,000?
Actually, it was a little more than $25,000, just because it, you know, the difference. And that is a we looked that up. That's a retro rolling deposit that we pay. I believe is it every year we will be. Steve knows a little bit more about this than...
The way the new insurance program works that we're involved in is they make an initial... They request an initial deposit from us based on their estimate for claims for the year. At the end of the year, then they do a rolling deposit, which is either a refund or a deposit. So this is just... This is their rolling deposit. It means we were above what their original estimate was.
Because I know in the past we've gotten significant refunds. Are we looking at this... $28,000 or whatever it was, refund coming back?
It could possibly come back, and it just depends. You either have to, once I calculate it, you either have a deposit or a refund. Just so happened we had to make an additional deposit.
We still have some. When we switched programs, we had quite a bit of refunds built up in the former program. We still have a little bit left. As you recall, we've been using those refunds to help balance the budget over the past few years, but we maintain a little bit in there to cover these kind of increases if we were to experience them. So it means our claims are up a little bit, but part of it's because we had such a good claim history the last few years, and the amount that it is up, it's not at this point alarming. It's just a small increase, but it does show that we're up a little bit over our experience last year, which the last few years were extremely successful.
The other question I have refers to the one-year versus the two-year budget, since one of the really key pieces of this was the early repayment of, I forgot which one it is, but one of the...
I believe I'll do a year-end change in June or July, and we'll change the budget because we'll have to reduce it because it was budgeted in that year, and we didn't receive it early.
So we'll have to make it up.
Except recall that the way we addressed the takeaways and the refunds was kind of on a multi-year period, so... It all kind of balances out. I mean, we had expected to be under in certain years as long as we balanced out over the period of time. And correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think it actually helped us this year because I think the auditors banked it in the prior year.
Well, it's in our fund balance number.
Yeah.
So
in the fund
actually,
balance.
So
yeah.
Actually, it's going to help us just earlier. So yeah, it'll work out. It'll still be in our fund balance as long as we don't go into that. It'll carry over.
I guess what I'm getting at is a concern that, yeah, it's you know, we've got the money in the bank, but we really do have to pay it back in a budget sense next year, even
Correct.
Though I know that was in our plan. I just Right. want to clear that
we're not, the fund balance would be
we're not
somewhat
$8,000
inflated.
Ahead. We're just $208,000 early.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. This is not a public hearing. However, if there are any members of the audience that would like to come forward and comment on 11A, this would be an opportunity. Okay, seeing no one, we'll close public comment and come back. And Councilmember Dickens, you want to start this one?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Angie, thank you very much for the report. I think it's always good to stay up to speed on where we're at, and looks like we'll be able to pay our electrical bills, so that's important to know. But as far as the report and the recommendations, I have no qualms with approving the detailed budget.
Go forward with, but I'm really looking at, for instance, the $17,000 for the, I know it's a small amount of money, but the $17,000 for scanning in all the old documents. I guess my comfort factor, I'd really like to see the whole year. And be sure that, in fact, we are on target at the end of the year. Yes, it looks like we're ahead at this point, although we are accounting for late payments. And I would really, before we start allocating significantly more funds, I'd like to see us allocating any more funds other than the ones that we really have to here, which are the two positions that are already in place that we're paying for. I kind of like to see us hold back on the additional expenditures until – specifically that one.
We could delay that one until the third quarter if you'd like. I could just put a note and bring it back if it's needed, if that's what you...
I don't know how everyone else feels, but that's my feeling.
What specifically were you talking about? The public works records?
Yeah, the public works records, the $17,000 there, and
they're going to scan them for archiving and for duplication. Did you have other comments?
No, the other ones are all pass-through funds or positions that we actually have already filled that we need to go forward. So that's actually the only one that I can knock off.
All right. I guess I have a bit of a different take on that, and it's largely due to, I think, where we are right now in the country and certainly in the state. One of our priorities here is on the emergency management side is something called continuity of government. One of the elements of could we store our archives or our records, could we pick up and move to another location and get back in business? And I think I would like to take just kind of an opposite take. I think we need to start budgeting now for doing this for all of our departments, not just for public works. But it's clearly something that a lot of cities are participating in right now, and particularly the rights and interest records, which I think fall into the category that were indicated in the budget report. So I would actually support that and support more of it. So anyhow, that's just my two cents. It's something we're going to have to do anyway. Might as well get a start on it now.
It's if I can add to that, it's also part of, if you recall, last year we did a fairly comprehensive review of our whole development review process and came up with a number of recommendations. And as part of that, we have kind of a two to three-year strategy on implementing a number of automation improvements to streamline that operation and improve our overall effectiveness within all our development reviews. So this is kind of the first step. You know, a short delay would not hurt us, but any significant delay will kind of throw all those improvements off schedule.
Okay. I don't have anything more to add to the report. Great job, Angela, as always. And I'm very pleased with this. And if there are no other comments, then we'll entertain a motion on 11A. To any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Council Board Member Dickens.
Yes.
Council Board Member Arnold.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Guthrie.
Yes.
And Mayor Chair Ferrara.
Yes. Thank you. That takes us to 11B, consideration of a site plan and additional appropriation for the police department expansion project.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm Craig Hendricks, Police Commander and a Project Manager for the Modular Office Expansion for the Police Department. We've availed ourselves of the Community Development Department to assist us through this process with obtaining use permits and advice on how to proceed with the project. So Ryan Foster has been good enough to prepare a presentation on our request here for additional funds to comply with the recommendations of the Architectural Review Commission and the Planning Commission. Ryan?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. I'm just going to start with a timeline of how we got here. BCA South County Animal Hospital applied for a pre-application review to review some plans for a redevelopment of their site, which is adjacent to the property site that we're discussing tonight, and their address is 270 North Halcyon. Both projects propose to remove and replace all trees that are on the what would be the northern property line of the city site, which is the shared common property line between the two properties. We went to the Architecture Review Committee in January for review of the plans and then on to the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission did approve the use permit with the variance, but also directed that the project be subject to further Architecture Review Committee review of the landscape plan, and specifically directed staff to employ the services of a professional landscape architect and also a certified arborist to make a recommendation on the proposed removal of the trees. The ARC then reviewed a revised landscape plan that was prepared by RRM Design Group, which included a kind of trellis structure on the front of the site to kind of visually screen it. And also the arborist recommendation to remove the trees. The ARC recommended that the trellis idea kind of be expanded upon and that an arbor structure be built on the front of the modular building, and also that several of the trees that were proposed to be removed be retained and others removed and pruned. Just last week, community development staff did receive a formal application for a conditional use permit and variance to redevelop the South County Animal Hospital at 270 North Halcyon. Their plans do still propose to remove the moving on to the fiscal impact, the original project was funded through the Police Facilities Fund for approximately $67,000. The staff recommendation tonight, which is to implement the construction of the arbor, would require an additional $4,200, which is around 6% of the original cost of construction. To implement the ARC's recommendation, which would be the arbor and retaining the majority of the trees, would require $7,800 appropriation, which is a little more than 11.5%. Of the original construction costs. This added cost to keep the trees is come about. Should the trees be removed, there's an opportunity to share that cost with the animal hospital. Should they remain, there is a cost to prune the trees, and also the ones that are to be removed would have to have the remaining stumps chipped. They can't be removed because of the way that the root structure works together in the whole grove. So there's an added cost there as well. We do have recommendation to remove and replace the trees from both the city's Parks, Recreation and Facilities Department. We did review the applicable tree removal criteria, and we do have a recommendation from Mr. Connor, the certified arborist that the city retained, that also supports that recommendation. However, the Planning Commission and then the ARC did recommend and approve that the majority of trees be retained. And also, I will mention that after the staff report went out for this project, one of the ARC members did come in and talk to me and wanted to clarify that the motion that was made at the ARC was not intended to remove all of the multi-trunk, quote-unquote, shrub trees, but only the two smallest ones, and then therefore retain the two large multi-trunk in and out. So it may end up being basically unused. And also the impact to the proposed vet clinic redevelopment. It's a tight site to begin with, and moving their proposed building further away from the property line may limit their parking and therefore restrict the size of their potential redevelopment. Both the issues of safety and liability were discussed at length at the ARC meeting in February, so we did mention that. Eucalyptus trees can have limbs that fall, maybe more so than other species. And that was just an issue that was discussed at length. And we do have Mr. Connor is here to further address that. I don't want to get too much into that because I'm not an arborist. Again, the tree removal criteria was outlined in the staff report. Staff does feel that we meet each of the five criteria to remove the trees. This illustration shows the existing trees. The darker green are the eucalyptus. The kind of yellowish green are the location of the multi-trunk trees, which are multi-trunk because at some point in the past they've been cut down and allowed to grow back. And then the trees that are outlined in red are on the animal hospital property. This is just a picture showing the trees along the property line. We're looking from the city-owned property north. And when I spoke of the multi-trunk trees, this is what they look like, and these are actually two of the larger ones. With that, the recommendation is that City Council appropriate an additional $4,200 for the Police Department expansion to design and construct the arbor, as recommended by the along that property line to enable the location of the modular unit at the proposed location. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those at this time.
Okay, questions for Ryan? Go ahead.
Hi, Ryan. I'm looking at the attachment one, which is, has the layout of the modular and then the proposed parking and such. The one thing that struck me is right now part of the concern for removing the trees is the fact that the structure will be so close to the trees. Is there a reason why the modular could not be located closer to the police building, the current building, and having the two tandem spots adjacent to each other?
The moving the modular building closer, I believe what you'd get into uniform building code issues. There's no firewall on the modular building. I believe if it's within, I think, 10 feet and there's any openings, it'd have to, there can't be any openings within 5 feet. And within 10 feet, I believe there has to be, I think it's a one-hour fire separation. And that's not part of the modular building.
Okay, so the width of the ramp and the, I'm looking at the ramp, and it looks fairly wide, and then there's some space next to the parking on both sides. We don't have 10 feet when you add all those together?
I'll respond to that, Mr. Arnold. The ramp is 4 feet minimum by code, and the parking needs to be a 10-foot minimum. I think 9 foot is code, but because it's a tandem spot, it's so far to get into. So the minimum would be 12 feet, and that would meet the build house inside and probably wouldn't be as attractive.
Now, the screen wall that we're talking about, the arbor, that in theory could hide those, though.
The arbor is a structure that has, as I understand it, posts about 8 foot tall and then beams across. It's pretty transparent. I mean, there's no vertical substance to it. It's more of a breaking of the view rather than actually a screening effect.
Okay. Has there been, I guess, you know, what I mean, I'm really troubled by the trees. I'll be real honest. I mean, I look at the parking issue of if we were paving it, that might create problems with the tree, but there are other solutions for parking spots that don't require an impervious material, which could possibly be feasible. So I guess my question is, have all alternatives been exhausted as far as locating this building in a way that we are able to not have it so close to the trees? I don't look at the whether or not cars are parked under the trees is a big of issue. I think if parking under trees becomes something that is how we qualify whether a tree survives or not, we might start taking trees down all over the place. So I do understand the concern with the building a little bit. The other, the question I have is, we've had now two very large storms come through the area. Have we noticed any kind of breakage or branches coming down from those trees? Because right now, I guess we would all agree, they haven't been maintained trees. And are we seeing any kind of...
The drawing does not show is there's about a 2 to 3 foot grade difference between the Halcyon side and the Rena Street side. There's no way we can provide access on the Halcyon side except at great expense. So we've had to put the parking to the rear, which pushes the modular all the way forward. And there's only about 2 to 3 feet of play that we could, you know, move it north or south. And I don't think that it's a significant, would add to the separation or mitigate the problem at all with the trees.
That's all I have right now. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, are there any questions?
Go ahead.
Yeah. Commander Hendricks, if you may, just a you probably have answered this in our past hearings, but as far as the modular, I know that, first of all, the police department is extremely impacted in regards to space. How is this module going to be used, and how is that going to interface with the main building? In other words, just for my edification, I guess.
Sure. As you said, the police department now has a severe shortage of office space. We have the three detectives working out of the Emergency Operations Center room. which is nominally a conference room. The proposal is to move the Detective Bureau out of the administrative area into this modular structure, and maybe one other full-time employee. So we would have up to four full-time detectives, investigators, or officers, in addition two part-time investigators working out of the modular in the Detective Bureau, but they wouldn't nominally be scheduling people to meet there.
And Ryan, you may or may not know this. What's the approximate age of the trees that we're talking about that are being recommended for removal?
I would defer that to Mr. Connor, who could probably answer that much more accurately than I could.
Thank you.
If the council is in favor of it, is Mr. Connor here this evening? I'd like to hear your assessment of the health and well-being of the trees, if you wouldn't mind. Yes, please. If that's not convenient for you, we can get a remote mic.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members, staff. My name is Wes Connor. I'm a certified consulting arborist and a landscape architect, so I'm not coming out of the woods just completely raw as a tree trimmer or somebody like that. I love trees, and it just so happens that the majority of the trees that are in that site are some of my favorite of the eucalyptus species. I normally detest Eucalyptus globulus, which are the big globby ones that everybody hates, but the eucalyptus that we have there are some of the best. However, they are fairly old, and I can't guess exactly because I didn't take any corings or I didn't do any cross-cutting of the tree stuff, so I don't really know. But my guess is somewhere between 50 and 75 years old. Of this type, eucalyptus, they have weak attachments to the trunk that they came from, and wind or heavy loads of any sort will eventually eliminate some of those so that it gets down to one or two or maybe even three stems. So you don't have a continuing shrub there. We eventually will have another tree with multiple stems, but far fewer. Now, I've gone through a few things that you've already covered. I would like to say that some of the more mature trees, I've looked up in them, and there are some branches missing in there. You can see where they've been broken off. There's one tree, the Eucalyptus nicolai, that has a branch. Well, the whole tree is leaning over into another tree, and it should come down no matter what because it's just creating a hazard. And if it were pruned back, why, it would have nothing left but a bare stem or a trunk on it, and it'd be another 15, 20 years before it'd make a real good tree out of it. Have I answered your questions?
I had one. What is a typical life expectancy of one of these trees?
Eucalyptus polyanthemus, that's the majority of them there, probably 75 to 100 years from my own experience. I know at Cal Poly we have one that is about 75 years old. It was planted in back of the old administration building, and I'm anticipating it to be near its life's end. Many a eucalyptus species will have a longer life span, but these are relatively short, and they don't really belong in the big scale. Speaking as a landscape architect.
Okay. Actually, I did have one other question. Sure. I believe when I read your report, it mentioned something about the possibility that these trees that are currently on the property line may have been part of a grove of some, or may have been connected to some other plantings in that particular area. Did I read that correctly?
That's a matter of guessing. I don't really know, but oftentimes when eucalyptus trees are planted in rows like that, they're put in for windbreaks. Mm-hmm. We all know that, and I can suspect that maybe it was a part of a farm windbreak at some time. I don't really know. I'd like to mention one other thing. Those trees are growing in sandy soils, and they have the ability to move around in the wind and move the root system at the same time. So even with impervious paving underneath, well, you're always going to have some lifting and shoving around. They will move, and they will have lots of debris coming down. Polyanthemis means many flowers. That means many flower and buds and the seed pods that come down that create additional stems on there. Stems get shaded out and they break, and you'll have a lot of small branches coming down. Heavy branches occasionally, but not as often as some of the larger trees. Eucalyptus also is known for its dry, windless droppage of limbs. They seem to, in hot weather, they seem to take up an extra probably 3 to 5 year maintenance periods, I would guess.
Can I just one quick question? In your opinion, having a look at how long do you think since they've been maintained? And do you think they've been maintained in the last 3 to 5 years?
Been maintained.
Yeah, so.
Not truly tree trimmed.
Okay.
Somebody has cut them down. Somebody's taken broken limbs off and pruned them back to stubs improperly, but I don't think they've been properly trained or pruned for a long time, if ever.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. Any other questions or clarifications on this staff report? Okay. Once again, this is not a public hearing, but we would allow members of the public to come forward on this item, 11B, if there's anyone in the audience who would like to do so.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I'm Gary Sherquist, 228 Short Street, and brought some samples. I am co-chair of the and co-founder of the Tree Guild, and I'm here on behalf of the Tree Guild tonight. And I would not be here if I thought these trees were dangerous in any way. I've done some research on them, and I've read Mr. Connor's report, and we talked at the ARC quite a bit, and it was very helpful. In fact, as I think he's going to be the landscape architect for the project, I hope.
No.
No?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm an advisor to the landscape architect.
Okay, good.
I don't do any architecture design now.
Okay.
Gary, could you pull that mic over in front of me?
I'm sorry. Thank you. These trees, both of the trees, the Nicolai and the Polyanthemis, are recommended street trees in the city of Los Angeles. In the city of Mountain View, both of these trees are listed as part of the water conservation program as trees recommended for use in water conservation. And in fact, it is a street tree on on Grand between Halcyon and was it Neva, the cross street. Street behind the police department, police building, anyway. At Grand there, for a block, there are seven of these trees of about the same age and girth in about a 3.5 foot wide planting area, parkway, with sidewalk, a parking lot, and a street, and no evidence of upheaval to the asphalt or the sidewalk that I could see out there. So I don't think that's got to be a similar area as this. It's a block away. So I don't think that there's any major problem there. Certainly these trees need to be pruned. They need to be cut, trimmed back. There's the one that arches over like that, I don't even think is on the property. I don't think that's the one that we're talking about. It's actually, I believe, on the VCA property. But in terms of mitigation for this building that we're putting in there, I think they're invaluable. I don't know how you can put a dollar value on them. I know that it's cheaper to tear them down, but that's, I just hope that you can save the trees. I think they're of value to our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Any other member of the public would like to come forward on this item? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment and bring this back. I do have
the trees are actually very large trunked. And one of the issues that we had with screening for fencing or walls around the police facility was the elimination of places where people could hide. It is possible that these trunks, since they are 20 and 30, up to 30 inches in diameter, could pose a security hazard. They are a distance from the building, though, whereas some of the screening that we objected to in discussions at ARC was very close to the building. So it is an issue. Is it a compelling issue? I don't believe it is.
Could I just add something real quick? In regards to using the eucalyptus as street trees, just checked with the director of Parks Recreation Facilities, and if when they're used for street trees, they are planted with deep root barriers, which force the roots to go deeper, whereas these had no such mechanism to kind of guide where the roots grow. So as a result, they've kind of spread out, and it's kind of a different situation as far as the whole structure of the roots goes, as far as the space that the trunk would take up.
Can I follow up a question on that? The ones that are being referred to, though, because I don't, my understanding with what we've done with street trees in the past, we haven't been using root barriers. It's something new that we're doing. So do you know for the fact that the ones that Gary mentioned actually do have root barriers?
I don't know that they do, and we would have to look and see if they've actually been replaced because of sidewalk damage. We'd have to check into that. I see Dan's shaking his head yes.
Yeah, the reason why I raise it, obviously, is the trees along the pike are, in my view at least, not something that, you know, if we had it to do over again, we would tolerate. That street is a mess out there, and I really do suspect that they're hazardous as well in terms of things that fall down.
Those along the pike are the eucalyptus globoides, which is the globulus, that we discussed earlier. They get really large, really high, and very brittle. These are separate varieties.
Okay. All right. Then we'll go ahead and open up this for discussion. And let's see, Councilmember Arnold, why don't you start us here?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to start off by saying this has been one of the more difficult issues I've had to face, in that I feel that it's either the trees or the police, and somehow I'm not supporting one or the other if I rule in one way or the other. And that's made me very uncomfortable, because I definitely support our police department wholeheartedly. With that said, I really have a problem with us talking about being a tree city, and it seems that I've heard from Parks and Rec in the past, we don't want to plant trees because of the maintenance, and now we don't want to have the trees that we have because of the maintenance. I really have trouble with that, in that trees are going to be an expense. I think that's accepted. In my mind, in a mature phone, when I went down there, I said, these aren't eucalyptus trees. I had no idea these were eucalyptus. So I think that's what you make reference to, Mr. Mayor. So I cannot support taking out these trees as proposed. When I look at them and I say, we're not losing branches there, I don't think a little mess is ever going to be a solid excuse for removing trees. If it is, then we might as well, the tree ordinance that we just passed a few months ago, say we're not going to keep that, because in my mind, anybody can claim that a tree is going to make a mess. So is there some middle ground here? I don't know. I haven't heard any yet. It seems either we take all the trees out or we leave them for the most part. As far as the shrub trees go, I have property that have eucs on, and I've cut them down before, and it's amazing how fast they come back. So in one sense, they can make great shrubs if periodically we want to chop them down, if they, from a standpoint, are going to be a safety hazard. If they ever get too large, they could just be nice-looking bushes. It's amazing how quick they really do recover. As far as the larger trees go, I just can't support it. I would love to find a solution that can make everybody somewhat happy here. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know if there's a way to come up with a one-hour fire barrier on the modular building so that we can get it closer. I think if we could get the modular building within 4 or 5 feet of the existing police station, we could take out any fear of a tree branch coming down on the building, for sure. And then the four tandem spots could be adjacent to each other, which actually would probably make them easier to get in and out of. So that or the other is going to be very unhappy. And I just can't support taking out trees and then telling private businesses that you can't take out a tree. So for right now, I guess I would like to try to continue to find a better solution than what we have before us. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think my take on this is that I think it's important for us as the city and us as the policymakers to provide a standard to which we all need to kind of work on. And I think that what Councilmember Arnold is alluding to, and I've seen this as maybe some inconsistencies with how we view things in regards to another application from a private citizen coming forward, and here we are with our own application. And I guess from my standpoint, I think that we need to be consistent and we need to be true to our word when the city, and I believe this council has supported the fact that we want to do everything in our power, I guess, to help protect and keep the trees that I think really characterize the city of Arroyo Grande. The trees that we're talking about this evening, as Mr. Connor has spoken, is probably 50 to 75 years old. And they're probably going to be there for another 25-plus years. And this module will be gone by then, and I would hope, because I'm hopefully we're going to be putting some dollars into really doing a nice renovation on the police department, which is really leaning and need to be removed. And I think that to me is going to send a clear message to the development community, to those folks that that we've really held a hard line on in regards to other areas. Yes, it may cost the city a little bit more money, and that's what I'm seeing here from a budget standpoint. And yet, I think it's our obligation, just like we do when a private citizen comes forth, we hold them to a higher standard. And I think that's part of what happens here in the city of Arroyo Grande. And I think that if we can't do that ourselves, I think that it's going to look poorly upon us. So I think we can live with those eucalyptus trees. I think that we need to. I think that if we were to look back, it probably there was probably a farm there at one time, and these were probably a windbreak at one time. And I think that if we had some folks that could tell us a little bit of the history of that particular area, that would be interesting. And I think it's important for us to maintain those. I don't see that as being a – yes, there's always a liability issue. Every street tree that we put in is a liability issue. But I don't think that's going to hinder us from moving forward and continuing to plant trees and so forth. So at this point, if the council wants to bring it back and look at a compromise, I certainly would be open to that. But I can certainly approve the additional appropriation of the $4,200 for the design and certainly delay the installation of the exterior enhancements. But I can't support removing all the trees at this point. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
We really might want to look at, and that is when the VCA project comes forward, that may have a significant effect. Frankly, I think that's probably what's driving this as much as anything. When that project comes forward and is approved or not approved, that we might reconsider at that point, and that there might be a consideration based on what ends. Because I do agree with staff; these aren't oak trees. They're 75 years old. They're great trees. They're particularly useful here for screening what will not be a really terribly attractive building. I'm sorry, guys, but a temporary building is not going to be, and it is already an exemption the city's made for itself. Exemption that's totally appropriate because we have clearly a public need for this. But I don't see the public need for the removal of the trees. So at this point, I couldn't approve the removing the trees. I think we might be wanting to take a second look at it when the other project comes forward and we really have to make some choices. But at this point, I couldn't approve removing the trees based on what's in front of us, particularly since we're hopefully looking at 3 to 5 years, the removal of the temporary building and the building of another something different there in the police station.
Thank you. Well, this has been a tough one for me, and I guess one of the reasons why I asked the question earlier, Craig, myself coming from a law enforcement background, certainly in a different part of the state. But I guess one of the last things that that we would ever design a police station around would be any kind of landscaping that would screen the outside of the building where you didn't have a clear view. I'm still torn a little bit on that one aspect. I tell you what, I would support maybe taking another close look to see if there's some way we can't orchestrate this modular in a better position somehow, a combination of pruning the trees, cleaning up that whole area. I'm concerned with some of the comments that we heard about perhaps the fact that there may be a shallow root system here. I don't know. But I think it's worth taking a close look at, particularly if we're going to be placing a permanent building or a permanent site there. When that happens in conjunction with the expansion of the animal hospital, all of those working together, I think, points us to the fact that we need to take a very close look at the those trees and particularly the root system again. As far as going in and making just a wholesale sweep of the area, I'm having some difficulty with that. Similarly, as my colleagues are. I'm not certain at this point if anything more can be done in terms of trying to orchestrate a little more harmony on that site between the extension or the positioning of the modular and the trees. I definitely feel that those trees ought to be pruned. They ought to be cleaned up. Branches that are between them, agree with that. This is a temporary building. I can't see throwing money away for a short period of time, relatively short period of time, by putting in a lot of enhancements that may well have to come out. So I think if we do put anything around there, it would be very minimal. So those are my comments. If anyone wants to try a motion, we'd be open to it. Sure.
Just real quickly, I mean, if money became available, what are we looking at a time frame for design and, building and going forward? We're looking at 2 or 3 years anyway, that it would probably be from November.
For the construction of...
Again, we're not looking at...
Construction of the expansion of the existing building?
Actually having the expansion of the place would be at least 2 or 3 years out.
It would probably be a couple years. I think, and I had some discussion with the RC, and I think I confirmed this. I think, and I shouldn't speak for them, but I believe their concerns were that if the funding were not approved, then we're looking at potentially 5-7 year timeline, and then it becomes a much more semi-permanent structure.
Well, then I guess the follow-up to that then, would it not be maybe more appropriate to come back with the enhancements, if you will, after November, because at that point we might want to do more than just a Band-Aid. If we're saying this is now going to be a 5 or 7 year building, maybe additional landscaping or something in the front might be appropriate, instead of right now we're kind of saying, well, we're hoping we can do a permanent building, so really let's just defer it.
Yeah. That would be fine for us. The way we worded it is we wanted the council and the planning commission, the ARC, to know that we intended to do this, that we weren't trying to reverse their decision, and that's why we recommended budgeting the money, but just delaying the improvements. But from a budgetary standpoint, that would work, as well, if not better.
The other question, I guess, that I have then is, can we approve this tonight with the condition, obviously, that trees would be protected, but that the site plan might be, I guess, reworked so that we don't have to see the site plan again?
Yeah, I would recommend. We have some time constraints at this point because the process has taken so much longer than we originally projected as far as obtaining this unit. The vendor's been very cooperative, but we're not sure how much more. So, yeah, we would recommend you approve what's in the report as far as budgeting the additional monies required to maintain the trees, if that's the direction you want to go. And then if you want us to look at other options, go ahead and direct us to do that before we actually go forward with the work. But if we could get some approval to go ahead with the overall project, that would be helpful.
Well, I think going into that with kind of an open mind. I know years ago when we added modular buildings where I work, we had a site plan and as to where they would sit in relation to the fixed structures, and we were making changes right up until the time they towed them out on the site, and one development code and all of the other fire restrictions that we have, and again go ahead and orchestrate a better placement. A safer placement, if you will, and look at the parking issue and some of the other things. I think we need to be a little bit flexible there. If we approve it, move ahead with it, and then with the idea in mind that we're going to keep a flexible and kind of an open attitude right up until the time we install it.
Absolutely, and that's been the process thus far. It's been a pretty fluid process trying to locate this structure. Just right. The other thing I'd like to add, if I could, just because we're a little sensitive about it, it's not intended to impact your decision at this point, but I just wanted to clarify. I heard comments about this possibly being an exception to our ordinance, and then I heard comments that we should hold ourselves to a higher standard, which I'm certainly supportive of that. I wanted to make sure, for the benefit of the public, that when we approach this in a way that we try to apply our rules to ourselves. And so when we evaluated this, we felt that this application would have been approved by us if it were a private property owner making this application. That's why we discussed, the criteria within the ordinance. So it wasn't our intent in any way to recommend any kind of exception based on our own policy. But certainly if it's the council's intent to try to hold ourselves to a higher standard, we respect that and don't have any objection to that.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion?
The additional funding for $3,600 to trim and maintain the trees and to delete the addition of the arbor structure and with the understanding that may be revisited after the November election.
Okay.
I'll second that.
There's a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Okay. Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. Okay, that takes us to item number 12, City Council Reports. I'll go ahead and start it off with SLOCOG. I'm hoping that all of you received a copy in your, I assume you all get the coordinator. So then you read about our marathon meeting that happened. We did appropriate over $56 million for roughly 65 projects. And so it was quite a long, lengthy meeting. We also elected new officers, and so I want to use that are in here. It would be really helpful if, and I know it's really edge of the seat reading, but take a look at this coordinator, because it can summarize. Those are long meetings. Those are sometimes 3 and 4 hour meetings, and so this thing can summarize it a heck of a lot better than I can. South County Sanitation District, been attending those meetings as well. There's nothing significant to report there. The plant is operating in good condition. I've also been attending the Zone 11A meeting, task force meetings again, finally. Took a brief hiatus simply because of workload. And for those of you who are interested, Steve, I'll leave this with you. This is something I think we want to keep handy over the next course of the next year or so. But this is related a lot to some of the discussion that we've had about our creek maintenance program here in the city and the impacts that it has on the lower reaches of the Arroyo Grande Creek as it goes through Zone 11A. So this is the what's been referred to as the alternative study, but it's actually the erosion sedimentation flooding alternative study that was done by Swanson Hydrology. And we think it's a very well researched and written report. It's certainly a heck of a lot more viable than what we were facing this time last year with the Department of Water Resources taking. I'd encourage members of the council to take a look at it. There's a disc here too, but good stuff in here, and it's not so technical that we can't understand it. So okay, next, Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie.
EDC, again, I think I mentioned this last time, they're moving forward with some of these, what they're calling economic impact reports on different industries, and which I think may be very helpful to us. I think they're also working on sort of a summary of what's happened over the last 10 years, the kinds of businesses they've been able to keep in the area, and specifically what their contribution was to making that happen. So I think you're going to see that coming out here fairly quickly. And that's all that's going on there.
Okay. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have no report this evening. Was not able to attend the South County Youth Coalition meeting this last week, and SCAT has not met since Mayor Pro Tem gave his last report. Thank you.
Councilmember Costello is not here this evening, so we'll catch up to him next time. And Councilmember Arnold.
Thanks, Mayor. The Waste Management Board meets next week, and the RAC right now has been studying the additional capacity of the state pipeline and what, if any, available for the South County, and also the possibility of banking some of that extra water up above the grade somewhere. And that's all I have to report right now. Thank you.
Okay. That takes us up to you sooner. But some of you may know that generally once a year the mayors get together in a forum known as the City Selection Committee, which is required by state law. And the City Selection Committee, along with the Board of Supervisors, makes recommendations and appointments to certain positions, one of those being LAFCO and another being the Coastal Commission. The Coastal Commission, as you well know, is a political appointment, but we are required to select one or more members of the Board of Supervisors and one or more members of city councils within the county. We met last Friday, I think, and somehow or another between the clerk and the other information and the county council who was there at the meeting, we misunderstood or misconstrued what was required. And as a result of that, we only appointed one representative or recommended one representative, and it was Supervisor Ashajan from the Board of Supervisors. And our thinking at the time was that, you know, he has a lot of support and probably had would have a better chance if we just appointed one and everybody got behind it. But revisiting the law and taking a look at what we should have done, I guess, we've scheduled another meeting for we have on the commission itself, we have one representative. It could be a city council member. It could be a member of a board of supervisors from either Ventura, Santa Barbara, or San Luis Obispo County. So we have one position on that commission for all three counties, representing all three counties. If you are interested, again, we're going to be meeting at 11 a.m. on March 13th, and you would need to show up, be there in person with a bio. And it would be good if you could get that bio or your resume, whatever the case may be, if you're interested, to Vicki Shelby, who's the county clerk that presides over the city selection committee, or not presides over, but clerks that body. So any takers, any interest at all? Okay, well, think about it. And if you are, it's required by law that you show up and be there in person. It's also required by law that you have a bio or resume in the hands of the city selection committee. Okay.
I had one thing too.
Sure.
I just wanted to thank everyone at the city and everyone else that was involved in the bike race. I had a chance to attend it. It was amazing how quick it was. The police were very impressive as they came down. But I thought it was a great chance to showcase the city, and I thought the turnout was excellent. And I hope everybody did get a chance to see it. And
Evolution.
We just record them for you.
There you go.
you were actually quite on that day.
That's right.
Okay, so item 16, staff communication. Any this evening?
None, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. It takes us to item 17, our last community comments and suggestion period. Anyone like to come forward? I don't see any lingering public. Chief doesn't count. So that takes us to item 18, and that's adjournment. Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. We're adjourned.